Waymo alone has 1,500 cars doing a quarter million rides a week. Just think, for Tesla, the numbers could get real crazy real quick.
Like with Waymo, it took 15 or 10 years and it was just so slow and incremental. But we know Tesla wants to go at a breakneck pace. If they can get rid of the safety drivers, expand that area just a little bit, then it could already actually be useful for a lot of people in Austin.
The fact is, if you do them back to back, especially the feel of the Waymo, it's much more jerky. The stopping starting doesn't feel as smooth. And in my couple of drives, it did cut off one guy at an unprotected left.
Look at that. It took 16 months for Waymo to overtake Lyft. That's incredible.
This is like the magic of what they've built, is they've spent the last 8 years building out this foundation using the technology of the compute and the inference computer in the car. And those billions of miles they've collected allows them to do whatever they want. So between the five of us, how many robo-taxi rides have we done? So I've done 23. Done 20?
Yep.
I'm at 13.
13.
I'm at the same as Galley, 13.
Hold on. Okay, so let me do math. Hold on. So 23, 20 is 43. 13, 13 is 26, 23. What is that, 60?
I got 50. I got 50, so.
119.
Wow.
Nice.
Wow. 119 robo-taxi rides. Okay. So one of the things I saw from the last few hours was they're starting to go into North Austin with the LiDAR-equipped ones, the LiDAR Model Ys and the Cybertruck, it looks like. They're starting to go North Congress. Did y'all get the sense that Tesla is in a position to expand the geofence much quicker than, say, Waymo would have in the past? Like, how are you guys viewing the expansion of the geofence? Who wants to go first? I always love asking that question for a panel and not giving any direction. This is good hosting, right?
All right, yeah, I got you. I'll give him my thought because it's not much, so I'll be fast.
Okay.
I don't have much experience with that. It seemed like Waymo's expansions and rollouts were a little bit slow, and then they almost seemed like they were going to start accelerating, and then they didn't. So for Tesla, I think if their idea is correct, if you just need the good brain and you don't have to do all the HD maps and the blah, 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 just a little bit of validation here and there, it should be pretty quick. I mean, I was hoping they'd open up at least a little more of Austin or sending out more invites, which we are seeing more invites within a month. That was kind of my fast progress hope. So hopefully we see something like that.
I guess the question to ask is, what challenges are there north of the river that aren't there south of the river? And Farzad, maybe you can discuss that since you're from the area. Is there certain things? I mean, I know a little bit north of the river. I've been there a few times, but are there certain things that are keeping them from expanding?
There's definitely more foot traffic, for sure. So like 6th Street, north of the river, if you go up Congress, 6th Street is a heavily foot traffic area. They close down traffic on the weekends so that street can become super walkable because they have a ton of bars, and that's where a lot of the students go. If you go probably 4 or 5 miles north, not even, probably 2 miles north from the river, you have the University of Austin, the campus, and that during the school year is jam-packed with pedestrians. Then on the weekends you have football traffic. So if the University of Texas Longhorns are like the thing in Texas, and I think that stadium holds 90,000 people or something. So on Saturdays, it becomes a total shit show getting in and out of the city. And then if you go even more north of that, if you go north Austin, you have the Domain. And the Domain is this sort of shopping area. It's like a promenade. It's a pretty big promenade. And that attracts a ton of attention, especially during the night. South Austin compared to North Austin. South Austin, at least from my experience, it's definitely got some stuff going on. But north of the river is where everything's at. And you have some construction too. So you have construction around Rainy Street. You got construction on Congress. All the new buildings are going up from where I can see north of the river, not south of the river. So that's creating, some complex situations around roads. So from that perspective, it would make sense for them to launch in South Austin first. But if I don't know if y'all experienced this too, but with the latest FSD versions, it seems like the car is more than capable in navigating in most sort of work areas, and this new version one would think would handle them even better. So it is a very different environment specifically for a pedestrian and work area perspective, but outside of that, the road system's very similar,
except for I think maybe the fact that there's a lot more one-way streets.
This is true
specifically in downtown.
north of the river.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true. We actually faced we took Waymo rides a couple of days ago, Joe Tegmeyer and I, when we were going down a road, and then there was someone, we were on a one way, there was a pickup truck literally just facing us on the other side of the traffic light. The guy had no idea. He just kept going. He's like, I'm just going to go around you. He just went around us and just kept driving up the street, which was completely nuts. So
my guess is they're going to focus on just getting more robo-taxis out there. I think even today, there's still only 11, if I'm not mistaken. We have tracked the license plates, and it looks like, and a lot of more people got, or a lot, like around a dozen more people got invited in the last week or so. Half of them not influencer types, you know, just regular Austin residents. And it doesn't seem like they've spotted any new ones. So I think we're still at 11. So my guess is they should expand the actual fleet first south of Congress. And then once they get more miles, get more comfortable with it, then maybe they consider in a month or two to get rid of the safety monitors. But I think at that point, that's when they would expand north of the river. But I think for now, they just need to expand the fleet, get more miles in, get more rides in.
Yeah. Gally, what do you think? What's going through your mind?
I feel like it's just so up in the air, because Elon was talking about like hundreds of thousands, or, you know, he always making these crazy claims. But when the initial rollout happened, it felt like he wanted to expand like crazy fast. And then I'm trying to kind of combine that with our experience, which really did feel like a little bit more of like a beta. So I kind of am very curious. And I would say like my certainty is very low on what's going to happen. Like with Waymo, it took like 15 or 10 years and it was just so slow and incremental, but we know Tesla wants to go at a breakneck pace. So I think it's like a tandem move of if they can get rid of the safety drivers, expand that area just a little bit, then it could already actually be useful for a lot of people in Austin. Like when I stayed, it just happened to be my Airbnb and hotel. I had two different places to stay. We're both in the robo-taxi zone, and like all these cool places were in the robo-taxi zone. So I think it will actually be useful to Austin residents on like the next expansion, and then really become like a truly commercial thing versus more of like this beta with Tesla people thing. So I'm kind of waiting for that, like it to cross into like sort of truly commercial territory.
I will throw out one anecdote. So I was at Capital Factory yesterday. So for those that don't know what Capital Factory is, it's basically like it's a combined VC firm / workspace place, and it's got 16 floors. And I was on one of the floors, and I heard somebody say, just a random person saying, "Yeah, I have robotaxi, and I could just go around South Austin." Just a random guy. So I don't know if maybe like we're getting more people. And again, this is one person. It could have been luck of the draw. It could have been 20 people that they invited, and we heard from 12 of them online because they're highly engaged. But I do wonder how many people are out there that have zero social media presence that are using the network downtown that we don't know about, because that sort of like perked up my ear a little bit. But it could have just been one guy out of three. And it just so happened to be there.
It's hard to know, because, you know, people talk about this all the time that, oh, only these certain people get it. But we don't know if the other people get it, because they're not online. Right. They don't talk.
And the going evidence around, so far, sorry, go ahead, Chris.
The last thing is, going around Austin when I was there, is I was asking different employees at different places I was going, my hotel, restaurants and stuff, "Hey, what do you think of the Teslas?" And I talked to, I don't know, maybe 10 different people. One of them hadn't heard of it. Everyone else was excited. And they're like, "Oh yeah, it's cool. I heard they're trying to compete with Waymo," or, you know, something like that. So people in the area are aware, you know, that this is happening.
I think based on what I've seen, and a lot of people who have been invited in the last week that are just regular Austin residents, they've DM'd me, and almost all of them signed up on Tesla's new robo-taxi sign-up form. So my guess is just those type of people that would have seen that are sort of social media type of people, and that would interact with us likely. So my guess is there isn't some large group, unknown group that never saw that sign-up form that's been invited, unless it's like employees or other. I have seen some Neuralink employees get invited, some SpaceX employees. But outside of that, my guess is it is just sort of those diehard fans of people that signed up for the form. But most of the people that got invited initially were influencers and those type of people, right? And as we flew out, they didn't have as many testers around. So naturally, you got to invite more local people to continue to use the service. Otherwise, you're not going to have enough testers around, even though there's only 11 robo-taxis.
Yeah. Did you guys have a chance to hail Waymos while you were in Austin?
I tried three times, failed three times.
Okay. Chris,
yeah,
you did.
Yeah, I got two. Yeah.
What'd you think of Waymo in Austin?
I took them, both of them, with with John, Tesla owner, Silicon Valley. And he said that the thing he said, which I totally agreed with, is it felt like FSD beta, you know, like back in the day where it's just not as smooth. And, you know, I'm not trying to trash in Waymo. I don't want people to think that every time I talk about it, but just the fact
Chris hates Waymo.
If that's my only option, I would definitely use it over a normal Uber. But the fact is, if you do them back to back, especially the feel of the Waymo, it's much more jerky. The stopping starting doesn't feel as smooth. And you know, in my couple of drives, it did cut off one guy at an unprotected left, like the light turned green and you should wait for straight traffic, but it just took off immediately. So we didn't almost collide or something, but it technically cut the guy off. Outside of that, it's not like it did anything dangerous or was going to crash or something crazy. It's just not as nice of an experience, especially if you look at it from a normal like consumer perspective of the infotainment you have back there that syncs with your cloud profile and all that. The Tesla overall experience, but also the driving feel, was just far superior.
But would you still take the Waymo over just calling a regular Uber if you had a choice every time?
Oh yeah, for sure. Oh, I would. I would for sure. We used them also a couple of times in LA, once or twice when we were in LA for the WeRobot event, funny enough. But we would definitely pick that. I mean, the experience was so cool to have a driverless car, even though it wasn't a Tesla. Like, there's nobody in the driver's seat. It's interesting and fun and cool. And it's just a better experience to not, you know, have to be courteous around the person driving you around. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
I have a scheme to throw out there. Pricing. Like, I was just talking to someone in LA yesterday about how he was saying Waymo is usually a dollar or two cheaper than Uber in LA. And he's my friend who's been taking it everywhere and just said they expanded and like connected different parts of LA. So it's a lot more convenient. But in San Francisco, I think Waymo is a little more expensive than Uber. So I'm curious what you guys have heard about that pricing and what the next step is for Tesla. Are we keeping it at 420 in urban centers? How are they going to decide to price this? Because I feel like so much of it is like up to them back at HQ of like, how much margin do we want to take? How many people do we want on? So I'm curious what you guys think of that.
Somebody want to go first? I have thoughts. I don't want to hog the
I'm not sure we're going to see like the real price for a little while. I think the 420 price is just sort of like, it's just to test the payment system. I don't think that's a real long-term price. Isn't Waymo close to or have already overtaken sort of Lyft's rideshare
in San Francisco?
Yeah, in San Francisco. Yeah. That's pretty crazy. And did you say it was a dollar cheaper in San Francisco or more?
San Francisco is more Waymo. Expensive.
San Francisco is more. Okay. LA apparently is a couple bucks cheaper. That's just what I heard. So I thought it was interesting.
But then that tells me people, even though it's a little more, it sounds like people prefer the Waymo service. So they're willing to pay a little more. So to me, the Tesla Robotaxi service is even better. So yeah, there you go.
I actually have some slides. I'm putting together, I'm on like slide like 115. I'm putting together a video for next week that's, it's going to go through the modeling. Yeah, I'm not even done yet. This like mega nerd. So this is San Francisco. So this was the graph. So starting on August 23rd, share of gross bookings for rideshare services in San Francisco, Waymo went from 0% in August of 23 to nearly over 25% in April of 25, overtook Lyft, which went from about 33% to closer to 20%. And you can also see Uber is on a downward trend as well.
Look at that. It took 16 months for Waymo to overtake Lyft. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is pretty nuts. And then the pricing for the Waymo in that same area, Lyft is a dollar cheaper than Uber, but Waymo is $5 more expensive than Uber on average.
And Waymo doesn't even have that many like cars in their fleet there. Like imagine Tesla when
exactly
way more.
And that's the eye-opening stuff. Dude, literally Waymo is $6 more expensive per average trip. And so that's how much. That's like 40% more expensive. And it's taking share. And this was a study for those like guys and gals taking rideshare in San Francisco. And they asked, did you prefer the experience of Waymo's versus a regular rideshare with a driver? Those are the people that are paying the premium for Waymo. And 70% said yes. 16% no preference.
This is a graph of introverts versus extroverts in San Francisco.
or it's a graph of people that just enjoy privacy. You know what I'm saying? And enjoy comfort. So it's like that study for me solidified the idea that whoever has scale will win all the miles. anyway, I don't want to derail the pricing conversation.
I would say, I think that, yeah, we're going to stick with this $4.20 price for as long as it's an invite-only service, and probably somewhere around the same time that it is, you know, anyone can download the app and use it, then we might actually get to see what Tesla's strategy is for pricing. And yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to watch their rollout. I think I'm kind of with Gally on, you know, it seems like it could be 50-50. We could be marching ahead on some exponential path where we're doing 2x the fleet of cars like every month. Or it could be something where we're kind of in an extended period of making sure that we have ironed out all the bugs in the whole service, you know, end to end, not just the cars and the driver and the technology, but all the other parts of offering the service and managing the fleet and insurance and all of those other things for a while in hammering out all those bugs, and then start to do that scaling. But, you know, it does seem like it's going to be hard to really discover what are all the bugs that you're going to run into as you scale, if you keep it too small for too long at the beginning, that there's a lot of those challenges that are only going to emerge with actually growing the service. So, and yeah, I know that Elon obviously wants to scale. I think there's pressure that is put onto this launch with the Model Y by the production plans for Cybercab, that I don't think you want to turn on the manufacturing line for Cybercabs until you have fully de-risked the fact that you can go ahead and deploy, you know, 100,000 Cybercabs in the first 6 months of the production ramp. Because, you know, we've already been through these production scaling situations with Tesla where, if you build out all the manufacturing capacity to do 1 million cars and you're only able to run 500,000 or 600,000 or 700,000 cars down that line, then you are literally burning cash at an insane rate. And I think that's really the fundamental challenge that Elon has been trying to navigate Tesla through as we move, you know, not from just being a car company, but being this autonomous ride-hail company.
Thank you to the sponsor of this podcast, Rebellion Air. Now, we know a lot of you are Tesla fans, and especially Tesla investors. And if you have more than $1 million of Tesla stock, Rebellion Air could be the perfect fit for you. Rebellion Air is an investment firm that helps Tesla investors reach their financial goals. They do this by helping you plan for your future, and they also institute strategies like trimming and adding, covered calls, etc. So if you're somebody who believes that Tesla has long-term potential, these kinds of strategies could maximize the number of shares you have by the time Tesla reaches those goals. And the guys at Rebellion Air do this by doing so much research on the Tesla story, and they do a lot of novel research as well. Things like doing cross-country full self-driving trips to really gauge and truly understand the capability of that specific software. They've done really novel research around the energy side of the business and other parts of the business as well. And so instead of dealing with a typical investment firm that may give you the cold shoulder by viewing your investment as too risky, the guys at Rebellion Air will help you reach your goals while fully understanding the Tesla story. And so if you're a Tesla investor and you have more than $1 million of shares, and you're interested in finding out more about Rebellion Air, I have a link for you in the description in the comment section below. You can go to rebellionair.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that we sent you. And now back to the podcast. Yeah, I think those are all excellent points. The pricing piece, like, and how they're going to create the demand for these things. I mean, what would think that for, like, after we saw that Waymo chart, why would Tesla charge any less than Waymo when Waymo's already taken away share from Uber and Lyft with a product that's far from perfect? Let's say that it does make janky movements. When we hailed the rides and got dropped off at Terry Black's, like, the Terry Black behavior is awful. It just drops you right in the middle of the fucking road, and you just got to figure it out. It allows people in the car that haven't hailed the car. Like, we saw a situation, my brother and I, where literally there were people in the wrong Waymo. It's like, how did you guys get into the Waymo? And they literally got in, they got out, they went into a different Waymo. Then there were people that are trying to get into the Waymo. They were in the wrong Waymo, so they went to the wrong Waymo. And then this whole time, this Waymo's in the right lane, blocking traffic and encroaching on the left lane. And then cars have to go around. It's creating blind spots. People are honking. It's chaos. And that's allowed. And that was on a video that I posted. Legacy Media hasn't picked it up. Okay, cool. Y'all are allowing that. So it seems like Tesla should have a path.
If that was a Tesla robotaxi, that would have been all over.
Oh, dude. It would have made it to the most remote like village in some random country, you know? It's like it would have made it to the aliens in a different universe, you know? It's It would have been catastrophic, quote unquote, for Tesla. But it's like that's behavior that's it seems like it's the regulators are completely fine with. So if Waymo has that and they're charging a premium over Lyft and Uber in, let's say, SF, but let's say they charge as much as Uber, then they have a ton of margin built into that product. And so the question becomes, why would they give up that margin? Like, why would they want to do that when they're scaling, when they're trying to scale this business, and they're probably going to have a ratio of robotaxis to teleoperators that's not going to be super favorable for the next couple months to a couple years, meaning that, you know, that they might have two taxis per operator. And if they have 1,000 robotaxis, that's, you know, 500 operators, and each of them is getting paid a salary of, say, 80,000 to 100,000 because of benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And then you got to employ them for the entire shift that the car is out there, which is going to be closer to 16 hours. So you need two people, and then you're operating on the weekends. So then you need, you know, 2.5 people potentially covering. So it becomes pretty expensive pretty quickly. So the question becomes, okay, like, why give up that margin? But then the flip side is, well, Tesla has a cash cow with the energy business. It's starting to become a cash cow slowly, but it's generating positive cash flow. You have a car business that's going to release cheaper models in theory here any minute, but they might delay it until after Q3 because of the big beautiful bill sort of moving that EV tax credit being ended much earlier, which is the end of Q3. So it's like, why release a cheaper car when the credit is ending? Just deplete your current inventory and then release a cheaper car. So there's all these variables going on. I think they'll just match Uber's pricing to start. I think they'll go, or they might go slightly below, maybe 5-10%, and be like, hey, we're cheaper than Uber. You get your own car, it's safe, super entertaining. You can, you know, change the AC, whatever you want to do.
Going super cheap would kind of squeeze out Waymo, because Waymo, you know, obviously Waymo has a behemoth of a company and Google behind them with, you know, that generates $100 billion in profit a year. But Waymo itself is still probably losing a couple billion, a few billion dollars a year, would be my guess. Yeah. We don't know their financials for sure. So if Tesla really undercuts them in pricing, that sort of forces Waymo to either keep their pricing the same and lose a lot of money or cut their pricing and try to be competitive. But that likely would result in them losing even more money. So this will be interesting once this actually gets up to scale for Tesla to see the two go at it.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting just to see what Google's, you know, obviously there's the Waymo side of it, but like, what does Google overall decide that their policy is in this space? Because, you know, on the one hand, you can think, well, it's just, you know, not their core business and they've got big fish to fry, just trying not to let search get disrupted right now and completely lose their entire business model. But then on the other hand, like, I think that embodied AI in the real world doing economically valuable tasks is obviously a huge market that they are well positioned to compete in. And you would think that they would have the interest in competing there. And so, like, you know, I can see business justifications on both sides for, yeah, let's abandon it and make sure that we, you know, focus on our core competencies and move forward versus, hey, like, this is an area where we can't afford not to continue to have an iron in the fire.
Well, yeah. And I don't know how much you guys use Google stuff. I know I'm pretty sure you're all iPhone people, but Google loves just ending anything all the time. They have huge products that tons of people use. And it's just like, yeah, we're ending this next month. And everyone's like, no, please, this is the best version of this available. And Google's like, yeah, we're ending it. So who knows if that does happen with Waymo, especially, I mean, do we have the any number of like cost per mile for these, either Waymo versus Tesla? Because I mean, the electricity cost, you know, is probably somewhere 4 to 6 cents a mile, something like that. And then you factor in tires, it's probably the same as any other car, maybe slightly more because these are kind of premium vehicles. Maybe we should kind of guess on that. But the Tesla cost per mile, especially if you're talking Cybercab, which is going to have far less parts, far less maintenance, is going to blow the Waymo out of the water. And so even if Tesla comes in here and undercuts the price by 5, 10, 20%, their profit margin is still going to be bigger. So I'm not sure, you know, the other thing Tesla's going to have to deal with initially, they have a lot of startup things are hard. It's hard to get this going and scale it. And one of the challenges is going to be having people switch to it. Because if you already have a Waymo app and you're used to it, you got to take yourself out of our, you know, Tesla nerd space here and be like, oh, what's the difference? I don't care. I already use Waymo. It's a self-driving car. I don't want to download another app or whatever. Until, you know, Tesla does the incentives of, oh, yeah, your first 5 rides are free. Whoa, five, right? You know, something like that. Then you can start to bring those customers over and then they'll start to see all the extra benefits. And then, oh, it is also slightly cheaper and all of that. So,
well, I think one of the big advantages will be once they reach the point where they actually provide a significantly larger coverage area than Waymo. And so, you know, if you can only hail a Waymo, we'll just imagine that right now you could hail a Waymo in Austin on purpose and didn't have to go through the Uber app, but it was still confined to the current service area. And the robotaxi version is 3 times, 4 times, 5 times as large that it services because they've got way more cars on the network. And then it's like, well, you can't use Waymo for a significant number of the trips that you would like to take, and you can use the Tesla. And so that will be a huge forcing function right there.
I mean, Waymo having to use Uber in Austin is the signal that says Waymo is already not going to be able to be price competitive because they don't have the scale to do that. Right? That's the signal.
And I thought that was such a weird move by Waymo. And it's like kind of thinking like, what's Waymo's leadership? Like, do we even know who leads Waymo? Like, no. Like, they've been changing. They had that Lewandowski guy who came up with
it. They have two co-CEOs.
Exactly. Co-CEOs. It's like, who are kind of new. It's like, is that a good strategy? So maybe they're good, but I just like, leadership is so important. They've kind of been in like la la land, like only self-driving car, we're Google science project, like we have unlimited money, like look at us, like. And now it's like, well, now you're competing head on with robotaxi, like the most cutthroat competition you could possibly have. Like, how are you going to navigate? And then where are you competing? Austin. And then you decide to make it so you can't even hail a Waymo, you have to try to use the Uber app. So most of the time you're getting a crappy Uber that's, even though I wanted to get the premium experience, it's like that to me was such a fumble of the user experience. So I'm curious to see like kind of how that continues to unfold. Like, will Waymo get it together? And I thought they had, at first it was so hard to get a critical mass on your own app, but they managed to do that in several cities. And now they've walked back on that, which is super interesting. It makes no sense to me. So,
well, I think scale. Yeah, driven specifically by, they only have the 1,500 cars right now. They can't afford to put more than whatever 100 cars in Austin. And so while they only have those 100 cars to spare for the Austin market, and especially, you know, they're also trying to go to Miami and other places too. Like, they just don't have the cars to put in any of those markets. And so their only option is to take a small fraction of like the Uber overall ridership in those new markets that they're trying to enter.
Another thing that I heard while I was down there, I don't know anything about this, and I can't remember who told me, it could have been one of you, is that part of why Waymo had to do what they did with Uber is there's some type of, you know, taxi licensing or something you have to get from the city, and that Waymo wasn't able to do it on their own. And so that's part of the Waymo partner, or part of the Uber partnership, is that they went under that umbrella that Uber already has of like, okay, you can operate in this space with your taxi vehicle. Again, I don't know anything kind of how those regulations work or anything, but that was something, man, I wish I could remember who told me. They're probably watching this. DM me. Sorry. so that may be part of the puzzle.
So too. Does that mean that Tesla was able to acquire it?
That's what we were talking about. Yeah. Whoever I was talking back and forth with, is they were saying, yeah, Tesla was able to go through, get this taxi kind of permit or license or whatever it is for themselves, and Waymo wasn't able to obtain that. Now, it may be a combination of what you're saying. They don't have enough Waymos to just open their app up and say, here, you know, come take a Waymo. And they do this kind of roulette thing where, you know, we had that bad experience too. I was with somebody and we were Googling, how do you get a Waymo in Austin? And you have to go in the dive deep in the menu and enable driverless and do all this weird stuff.
We figured it out, by the way.
Yeah. And then it's still a gamble, you know, whether you get one or not. And we ended up getting a Mustang Mach-E, and then you end up with this, you know, this disappointing experience of like, oh, I want, you know, it's still a decent car, but I wanted a Waymo.
What I don't like is that in the Uber, so I took three Ubers. I have the setting on in my Uber app that says, you know, I prefer to have an autonomous vehicle. Every time I just got some old gas guzzling, you know, boring car, and I was bummed out because I wanted to try a Waymo in Austin, but I couldn't because I wish there was a way for me to like say I want a Waymo. I'm willing to wait 20, 30 minutes. Just tell me how far it is and I'll wait.
But that's not going to work long term.
No, it's not. No, it's not. But this is this is what Gally's saying. Like, they had a lot of people using their own app, which guaranteed you a Waymo every time, but they switched over to the Uber app and then they sort of, you just get whatever you get and you just hope you get a Waymo. It's a terrible solution.
Terrible solution. And then not only that, like, let's say they create an environment where you are guaranteed a Waymo and you're willing to wait the 20 extra minutes, et cetera, right? That's going to destroy Uber's network, because the only way they can get people to come and drive on their network is to hike the prices up so it makes sense for drivers to come on the network. And that's why long-term self-driving cars make no sense on the Uber network. It's because it's going to destroy their network effects. Because self-driving cars are cheaper per mile because they don't have a driver, as long as you have a good teleoperator ratio. And as long as that's true, Uber's entire network will collapse unless they partner with somebody that can dump hundreds of thousands of self-driving cars on the network. But at that point, why would that player do that? We can just run their own network because they have the skill to do it. Why would they give a cut to Uber when they could do it themselves?
That's why I don't understand the bullishness on Uber long-term for that reason.
Yeah. This is why I make sure to, you know, pick on Gary Black at least once a month, just to remind him.
But even is there like not a bigger change with like, okay, Uber, Waymo, Tesla, are they not all on kind of the winning offensive team of this bigger shift of like car ownership in general? Now, I'm kind of playing devil's advocate. I do think Waymo and Uber aren't going to do well with robotaxi, especially Uber's weird position. But like, just in general, this idea that people won't own and buy cars and do that kind of ecosystem, and they will move to these other services that allow them to get around. Like maybe Uber is like, oh, you could do a Lime bike, you could do a self-driving car, or you can take this public transit thing. Like that even to me has a lot more value and could be something versus like Volkswagen or like even like Rivian or something, or Ford or GM, you know?
Yeah, there could be something short term there. But so when I do this traveling for, you know, events or whatever, I pretty much always use Lyft. My credit card has like a partnership with Lyft. So I get, you know, a discount and it's cheaper than Uber and everything. And Tesla made that app in, who knows, maybe it took them a year, let's say, however long it took them to make the app they're using for the robotaxi. And it's a very small network. There's only a few people using it, et cetera. But for what it is today, that app is way better than Lyft's. I mean, it's not even close. Lyft's app, I've used it a ton, but it still gets kind of muddled and a little confusing. You click, you know, all right, I get the priority pickup because of the credit card thing. I don't have to pay for that, but I get the benefits. And it still will be like, all right, your ride's coming in 3 minutes. Oh, okay, your ride's coming in 6 minutes. And it's like changing. And the map isn't that good. Tesla's app was really nice. And it was, I mean, you used it. You open that app, you type in, I posted a video from opening the app. From your home screen, you can have a robotaxi on the way. It was less than 20 seconds, I think it took me. And I typed in the destination. It wasn't like a pre-saved thing. I opened the app, typed my destination, accept ride, and that was it. So
and you're guaranteed a Tesla robotaxi every time.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think short term, you have a pretty decent point, actually, in that if people stop owning cars as much, they're going to look for these solutions. And if for some reason a robotaxi isn't available or a Waymo, they might go, oh yeah, Uber has some stuff too. Oh yeah, that'd be fun. Let's take a scooter instead or whatever. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good point. I like that. But I think long-term, it's just going to be, why wouldn't any of these companies make their own app? Because if they go through Uber, now there's another percentage they have to give away, you know, to somebody else.
Well, and I also think the other piece of this too is these cars are going to be so cheap to manufacture. Is what's going to stop people from just owning their own self-driving car and just not add it to the network? You know, I think that's also a variable that doesn't get discussed enough with what Tesla's, you know, proposing. Like a Model Y, you can buy for 38 with the EV tax credit, right? The cheapest model, I think, is 38 with the EV tax credit. So if that goes away, it's 45. But let's assume, you know, over the next couple of years, they come out, you know, cheaper trims and they have these like lower cost vehicles. So let's say there is a sub 40,000 or a mid 30,000 or even below that car you can just buy that has unsupervised self-driving. So even if there are people that don't want to do ride sharing, they're going to have access to buy a self-driving vehicle, period. And the companies that can offer that package where it can drive anywhere, those companies are going to perform really well. And the only company that's doing that is Tesla today. You know, so even in that car ownership model, Tesla's well positioned.
And what will they charge with FSD? Like, that's so interesting with like the MKBHD bet. It's like CyberCab for under 30 grand. It's like, well, it will be, but there'll be a 50 grand FSD option. And I think Elon's made some interesting clues about like, well, we're going to be a lot less focused on selling cars because like people can still buy them, but they'll have to pay a lot more for FSD once it's unsupervised. So there's kind of like that trade-off going on.
I think the thing that probably ends up making the most sense there in the limit is, you know, maybe two levels of service or potentially more, where like one, you just have unlimited on-demand ride hail of not your car, and it's just whatever is available. And then if you want the next tier up, and you know, you might pay $250 or $300 a month or something for that. Or maybe, you know, there's that and that's capped at so many miles. And then if you want unlimited miles, it's more than that. But then potentially even a higher level of service where it's like, okay, it's your car, but we still own the car and you're still just paying a subscription to it. And so maybe it's like $500 a month or something to get the car that it lives at your house and you're the one who gets to use that car exclusively. But it's not a car that you actually own. You're just kind of leasing it.
Yeah, you won't be doing insurance on it for anything like this, right? Because you're not the one driving. And, you know, I don't know. I want to own something still one day. This stuff gets a little scary when we get into this stuff. I mean, you know, some people are worried about it, and I think they should be a little bit. Yeah. But there's different tiers just like that. That's a really good idea. But the different tiers of the FSD software as well, right? There's going to be, because right now it's called FSD supervised, and a lot of people are, you know, a little worried that Tesla's going to be like, hey, we have FSD unsupervised. It's actually $500 a month, not $99 a month. You know what I mean? So something like that could happen as well.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense for them to do tiers. You know, I think they're supervised, unsupervised. Then you have completely driverless without a steering wheel and pedal. Then, you know, we'll see what the regulations are around owning that car or having it as part of a fleet, right? Then you also have like around the pricing stuff with FSD and like ride hailing stuff too, is like, is it going to go to a model where it's a per mile, or is it going to be a zone price? That's some ideas I've seen being, you know, like kind of like public transportation, a bus ticket is $4 or whatever, regardless of where you get picked up or dropped off. Could that be the pricing model for robotaxis long-term? Where South Austin, maybe it is $4.20 forever, but it's South Austin. And then once you cross the bridge to North Austin, you add an additional surcharge of $5, whatever it is, right? So from where you start to where you go, the zone pricing starts to apply. But they have the option to do whatever. This is like the magic of what they've built, is they've spent the last 8 years building out this foundation using the technology of compute and the inference computer in the car, and those billions of miles they've collected allows them to do whatever they want, because now they have the scale to get to that point. It's a fascinating discussion. It really is. And I think, I do think, like, I'm trying to convince my wife to trade in our current Model Y for the new one, because we have FSD on the Model Y. It's a 2021.
Just wait. Just wait.
Okay. Why?
Hardware 5 is coming.
Wait for Hardware 5?
At this point, I would. Okay. Yeah, it's... Yeah. I mean, look back at what Elon has posted about it. You know, it's just, I'm sorry, Tesla, if you probably hate when I say this stuff, but a car is a big purchase. I mean, you said what's a 2021?
2021.
Yeah. So it's been 4 years. I mean, you're going to wait at least another 4 years after your next one. How annoying would it be if you're like, yeah, Hardware 4. And then, you know, 6 to 12 months later, they're like, hey, here's Hardware 5. Like, oh. So.
Yeah. Anyway. And I have a Hardware 3 Model Y as well. Yeah, so
that's my opinion.
Okay. I mean, do you think they'll pull the free FSD transfer? Because that's the main reason why I want to do it, is because we can have the free.
Yeah, that's okay. That can be another video. That's tough because then you got the tax credit, and yeah, there's a lot of decisions to make. But
Chris, I'm trusting you with my life here. You got to give me good advice. Okay, what's your investment advice? Can you give me some investment advice too?
You don't want that.
Okay. Oh man. It is a good thought though. I mean, I and this is part of like the equation. Like it's such a mind blowing experience being in an actual Model Y that's out of the factory, driven around in South Austin. That like it literally blows my mind. It's unbelievable that the best selling car, or the second best selling car technically, because the RAV4 is the best selling car. It's just whipping around South Austin. Chilling.
And how good marketing is that going to be for Tesla's brand? Like I think this could be kind of a rising Phoenix moment for Tesla, where they've all this Elon politics drama, and then. In some ways, there's no such thing as bad press, and a lot of attention went on Tesla. And I've been like holding out on this theory of like it's going to swing back. The pendulum always swings, which seems crazy. But I think the robotaxi is going to do it. Like once people are like, oh, Elon, he came up with the self-driving car, like that crazy tech guy. And that's going to make people want to try Teslas. And they're like, wait, I could buy my own robotaxi. Like even me going back to Seattle, looking at my friend's Model Y, being like, he has a robotaxi. Like this is crazy. Like he bought that for like $55,000 or whatever, including FSD. Like that's it's such a good deal, especially once they released unsupervised. So I feel like I'm curious what you guys think. Like, will this kind of be a big needle mover for actual sales of vehicles now, and kind of this turning point of the Tesla brand as robotaxi? Like what you were saying, Chris, like people in Austin are just like, this is sick. It's, you know, people are talking about it. Like my sister calls it the Waymos, and she's like, oh, Waymo is so annoying. Like, I can't wait for robotaxi. Like people are like, it's kind of exciting and cool to see like that optimism return to the Tesla story, you know?
Yeah. I did have a couple conversations with people that were surprised that it was the same car that you could buy. I posted one on X with this, and Sawyer was with me, this family from Australia. And they were talking about, you know, the robotaxis. They were like, oh, it's so cool. We've taken a Waymo, which was really cool. And I was like, yeah, it's the same car you can buy. I own that car. Like, and Sawyer does too. We own that car. And like the robotaxi car, it's like, yeah, it's the exact same car. We don't have that software as of right now, but it's physically, it's the same car that pretty much anyone can buy. So people do get excited about that.
Yeah. The way that I think about this right now is kind of almost as an analogy to AWS in some ways, that, you know, what Jeff Bezos and Amazon did with AWS was they had to make, you know, all of the primitives for doing apps and internet things online easy. So you have your storage, you have your compute, your networking and servers and all that stuff. And you like have to break each one of those down into its core element and do a primitive for that. And then you let people just kind of build on it. And eventually that thing turns into, you know, a huge transformative platform for the internet. And then obviously Amazon gets a major tailwind to their business from that. And the robotaxi that Tesla's launching is a new primitive for transportation that, you know, Waymo is kind of aiming at that, but it's not just removing the driver from the seat that achieves the actual new primitive for transportation. You have to do all of the things when you do that to make your cost 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times cheaper than a human-driven gas-powered car. And, you know, Waymo just hasn't done that yet, that between the cost of the vehicle itself and then their limited scale and the limited growth rate that they have, that, you know, I mean, we don't know this for sure, but I would be willing to bet dollars to donuts that their actual all-in cost per mile today is at or above an Uber or a Lyft. And so that's the thing where it's like, yes, maybe they're on a path eventually to be cheaper than Uber and Lyft on a per mile unit economics basis, but I think Tesla is going to be there or close to there very, very soon. And then obviously growing rapidly. And so then is like, there's the ride hail piece of like a whole bunch of new things become possible on top of that transportation that is three or four times cheaper than anything else available. And it's not just driving people around, it's also goods and, you know, delivery of all sorts of different things. And so it's just, yeah, like it's going to be really hard to predict in advance exactly what all use cases are going to emerge for the service. And also the overall size of the TAM, because, you know, a lot of people are thinking of it as like, this is just a fraction of current ride hail. And, you know, I think the total addressable market for transportation that's four times cheaper than current transportation is, you know, many multiples of current ride hail. And yeah, then especially when you apply that technology to semi trucks and you're able to do for, you know, transportation of all goods, what you've done for ride hail services, like the overall transformation that we're just now starting is well beyond, I think, most people's wildest expectations.
Well, I think if you like, if you sort of think about what does this do as far as the cachet for Tesla or the cachet for Elon Musk, right? Like all these are like the technical, this is like the technical viewpoint of why this thing is going to win. But you think about like public acceptance or like sort of like the revival of it, what how it manifests is Tesla's ability to run a Super Bowl commercial with a car literally driving coast to coast without a driver and saying you can buy this for $38,000. That's the manifestation of it. And that manifestation is an undeniable technological feat. Undeniable technological feat, right? And that is what got Elon so popular in the first place, is that he would do undeniable technical feats. Making an electric vehicle profitable, that's sick. Like people literally thought it was impossible. Possible. Reusable rockets. Impossible. Nope. Possible. Okay. Coast to coast driverless. Impossible. Nope. Possible. And you can buy it. You can go buy it, right? That is the kind of thing that's going to spark that revitalization. And it's heavily dependent on them actually reaching the safety threshold to be able to do that. So the question becomes, how far away are they from that? Are they, or even if it's just like driving around Austin, it can just be an extended drive where a normal person can be like, holy shit, I can have that in my driveway. Right? That's going to supersede any political noise we've gone through, any America Party, any Trump is on the Epstein list. It doesn't matter. People just want cool shit they can afford. 80% of people just want cool shit they can afford. And they can forget about, dude, if politics ruined things truly, Disney wouldn't exist, Bud Light wouldn't exist, Amazon wouldn't exist, Apple wouldn't exist. Oh, there's kids mining cobalt for your phone. Right? In the Congo, Apple would have collapsed. No, they're perfectly fine. And it's a shame that that's the truth, but that's an example. Amazon, Bezos has slaves in the warehouses. Okay, everybody's got Prime. All right? So it's like, there just has to be undeniable value for money. Undeniable, that is what wins the hearts of people ultimately. And that could be a commentary of like, okay, people are kind of fucked up. You know, it's like they're willing to forget these like terrible things. But like if you compare what Elon did versus the other narratives, oh, Elon just said things I don't agree with. Right? So what is the sticking point of that? Doesn't seem very strong.
Long term. I think the real demo, no one really cares about driving, you know, coast to coast driverless. The real demo is go to sleep in LA, wake up in Vegas.
Or come pick me up from the bar because I'm shit faced. And I don't want to pay an arm and a leg to get home because of Uber surcharge pricing. That could be another one. Yeah.
I think it would be cool if they did one with like a horse, because your horse used to be your self-driving car and like take you home from the bar drunk, and they had like some cowboy in the Wild West, and then they'd made like a kind of Texas Tech sort of new cowboy in the Wild West, but it's like
that's a Texas demo.
You're like car demo. Pulls up. Yeah. Like there's a lot of potential here. I mean, that robo-taxi video they dropped is so sick. Super like sick. I've probably watched it like 100 times. Like it's like 1 minute on YouTube, like just like. And somebody tweeted like, how could you watch this and not invest in Tesla? And I like that hit me. I was like, damn, like, honestly, you're right. Like, this is so sick. Like, they're showing you what it is.
Was that moment for you guys more sort of mind blowing than actually riding in the robo-taxis? Because for me, it kind of was, because there was no safety monitor and it went on highways and it did the whole 30-minute drive with nobody in the car. to me, that was like, holy crap. That was sort of more of a mind-blowing moment almost than testing out the beta robotaxi service.
For me, it was, I think the robotaxi was more mind-blowing because I've been using FSD and AP and autopilot for so freaking long on the highway where it's like, yeah, of course it can do that. Of course, like I've seen it. Like it does it perfectly for like, it's done a year. Like, of course, you should have yanked me away from the driver's seat years ago, right? I think in the actual city was, for me specifically, was a bigger deal. But I think for the masses, that video is gonna have a huge impact long term. Because it's like, it really just highlights how groundbreaking this is.
Yeah, there's a little more magic when nobody is in the car, for sure. Because, you know, the safety monitor thing, I get it. I'm glad they're being safe. That's number one for sure. But it lets a lot of people discount what's actually happening. And, you know, if you know nothing about what's going on and then you see some guy like holding his hand on the screen as the car is driving down the road, you're going to be like, what is going on here? It's not as impressive, right? If you don't know the whole story. So, yeah, I think that video of having nobody in the car, it drives all the way, is very impactful. And that day when the safety monitor is removed is going to be huge as well, because
I agree.
You know, the haters are going to continue to hate and move the goalposts and say something else, which is fine. Like that's always funny to look back on, you know, when some time passes. But as of now, it does kind of leave a little bit of like, yeah, there's no driver, but it, you know, this guy is sitting here like watching every move, you know, ready to do something at any second. And it just takes away a little bit of the magic. That's all.
It's low-key kind of awkward just having those people just quietly sit there in the front.
Well, at least
especially since they can't, talk to you at all. So that is a little bit more awkward than having an Uber driver. It's like they're there, but there is, you know, this invisible wall.
Yes, it was.
Have you guys tried giving somebody food? Maybe that's the thing. Maybe they're just hungry, guys. Maybe they're just hangry. They don't want to talk to you.
No, I did have one when I was live streaming on X, and he chimed in. We were talking about their hand on the button, and he chimed in, and he's like, oh, my favorite conspiracy theory is that we have Neuralink, and we're driving the car with Neuralink. And I'm like, yo, he's talking. We got the inside scoop.
That's funny. Gally, I saw you came off mute. Did you want to jump in and say something?
No, well, I was just going to talk about how it was a little awkward with the guy in the front seat, and I'm curious, like, what they are saying, like, after work, and they're all meeting up, and they're telling stories about, like, the day, like, how they're
these
talking
people
about
are insane.
Yeah, these fucking Tesla nerds are insane.
Tesla YouTube people are...
These dudes are so weird.
Yeah. I was the whole time, I'm like, get me the fuck out of the car. This is crazy. What are these people doing? Oh, man. What comes first, yanking the safety rider or geofence expansion?
Geofence. Yeah.
I think geofence too.
Why?
Just seems like it seems like an easy thing. Like Waymo's already expanded. And then you can have the safety person checking out and making sure that new zone expansion is going okay.
Yeah.
So is the idea here then to expand Austin as much as possible, then yank the safety rider, then go to a different city? Is that how you guys are viewing the expansion?
Yeah, I think it's fair.
Yeah.
Go north of the river. That'll be a big step forward. Yeah.
I would like for them to go to suburbs.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Austin metropolitan area. And aren't they legal in all of Texas? Or maybe I heard that
correct.
Wrong. But okay, because I feel like in some ways, I would just do that. Like Texas and I guess Silicon Valley and LA seem like obvious next ones, but I don't know. Like California, I feel like is a trickier situation. But like just the idea of taking over the Austin metro area and making that a huge business and crushing it there seems like right for the taking, kind of.
Well, and Tesla's got to already be kind of taking over that area, right? With how much they've grown and how many employees. I mean, so many people in Texas now work at Tesla. And they're such a huge part of the local area, and they've made it better, right? So now having the robotaxis make it even more better is kind of a nice next step. And I think a lot of like the expansion and things is going to rely on, totally guessing, but their next updates that they do software-wise, which now it's going to get a little weird for us because on our personal vehicles, we haven't really had any changes to FSD in, you know, a long time. And that might continue, right? I mean, if they're trying to do robotaxi and make it safe and better and expand it, why are they going to send us another update that you know, makes it slightly better when it's already so good. So we may now be having FSD updates happening to RoboTaxi, and we have no clue what's going on. We're not going to know the software version. We're not even going to know an update happened. And so my guess is that, and it's a little bit of a pessimistic take, but my guess is that overall they didn't get the software quite as far as they wanted. And they also didn't want to miss the June deadline that they've been, you know, talking about for like, what, 6 months now or something. And so I think a lot of, you know, removing safety people expansion and all that is going to rely on what Elon was saying it on X, how they're going to have the 4X parameters or, you know, all these different things he's talking about. And who knows exactly what it's going to take for that software to be trained or how much more data they need to put in to even train the software. So, you know, my uneducated guess is that they're looking at, okay, let's get this next step or let's move on to version 14 or, you know, whatever they call it internally. And that is going to be the huge stepping stone because as of now, I mean, we know we've been using FSD for a long time. We know it used to suck. And then I got like, yeah, this is not bad. And now it's at the point where it really does pretty much everything. And most of the things you do as a human in the car is personal preference. Whereas when you're in the RoboTaxi, you can't. There's no personal preference anymore, which is great. So you can really see what it's capable of, really see that it is or isn't going to mess up or whatever. I just really think they want that next step, the next update, the better version of FSD. And that's when we'll really see things go crazy. And again, if their vision works out the way they've talked about, this, you know, smaller geofence or just 11 cars or whatever in X amount of time is just going to be meaningless. It's going to be a blip, you know, in time as they explode these vehicles all over the place. Well, maybe that's not the best thing to say, but as they launch lots of Teslas on roads all over the place, right?
Chris hates Waymo and he wants Teslas on fire. You guys heard it here first.
Okay? Yeah, you got me. I'm exposed.
Yes, exposed.
It is funny that Tesla already has 11% of Waymo's fleet in Austin. Granted, there's safety monitors, but
that's a good way to put it.
Puts into perspective how quickly Tesla could just add more to the fleet.
Yeah. And they make Waymo's entire fleet in 5 hours out of their global factories, which is another like insanely mind-blowing stat. I do wonder like how much of the RoboTaxi fleet is going to be the testing base. Like, are they going to morph the RoboTaxi fleet with the safety riders? Because you would assume they're going to have safety riders for a long time, especially as they expand, right? Because when they go into a new area, you're going to want safety riders for some portion of time. And then as you go to yanking safety riders, you're probably not going to do it all at once, I wonder. I wonder if maybe they'll have it like this. So statistically, let's go down to 10% of the fleet has safety riders. So if we have 100 cars, 10 of them have safety riders, right? And I wonder how many of those safety riders are going to be used to test the newest versions of FSD and then use and then sort of like leverage the RoboTaxi network to also test the next versions for our cars. And then you sort of create this very like a lot of harmony around your testing and phasing. And then you're leveraging everything already. You're making money on all of it because even those cars that have the safety riders testing the car, they're also making money because they're going around doing fairs, right? And it becomes this very harmonious thing that's only available when you have a vertically integrated company like Tesla has, right?
So do you foresee like a traveling circus, essentially, of Tesla safety monitors that, you know, like they basically debug South Austin and then they move to North Austin and then they debug that and then they go from there over to San Francisco and like they're just kind of traveling around the United States as they roll out new geographies and it's, you know, essentially the same cast of characters. And then, you know, once they've debugged an area, like then they're not operational there anymore.
Well, I think what they might do is maybe each region gets, they're capped. I don't think Tesla's going to want to go above a certain number of safety riders. They're probably going to say, okay, maximum safety riders globally, 1,000, whatever the number is, right? Let's say the South region gets 100. And then we only expand the network without safety riders when the data tells us to, right? Because they have all that. And that's sort of how I'm thinking about their teleoperation thing as well. You know, when you click the support button, someone's like, hello, can I help you or whatever? That's probably going to work the same way, is that they're going to cap the number of people they want. Because if you really do start scaling the business with with those operators and you don't set some sort of threshold, that's going to blow out your cost. You can't have 100,000 robo-taxis and 50,000 teleoperators. Like the business will be break even at best. And maybe use that for data collection, you can justify, but then now you're managing 50,000 people and that creates its own host of complexities. So I think if the solution is, well, more compute and more data is what creates better ratios because it's safer, then cap the number of things and then Texas has its own. And then once they're at perfect safety, maybe you reallocate that headcount somewhere else. Maybe they go to the Northeast, to like New York, or maybe they go to China, or maybe they go to Europe, right? That's how I see it. I don't know if it's going to be the same headcount. It could just be like, you know, you're just, or the same people, it'll be the same headcount. That's how I see it. That, I mean, they have the flywheel to do that. You know, if the bitter lesson, right? The bitter lesson is just more training compute. Okay, then more training compute. That's what Cortex-2 is. And more data. Yep. So do that and get your ratios down, or ratios up of robotaxis per teleoperator. Okay. What else? We're an hour already. Going freaking so fast. Anything else we want to hit?
I don't think so. I can't think of anything.
Going once.
Gally made I have a scheme face.
Well, I was going to say...
That's his permanent face.
Yeah, yeah. We could end it with just like, when's the announcement going to hit of like Geofence expansion? I think it'll be in a couple weeks.
I was going to say end of July.
I'm going to go August. I'm going to wait till August.
Breaking news. Sawyer bearish on Robotax.
What do you guys
Elon
think?
Unfollow Sawyer for being bearish. Yeah.
No, blocks.
Yeah.
Blocks. Yeah, yeah.
And I think end of July would be, I go back and forth on this a lot because part of me is like, yeah, they did this small thing and it's going to take a while before they can start expanding. But, you know, it's going to be, is it going to be this or is it going to be this? You know what I mean? I'm hoping by the end of July, we see some type of expansion, even if it's a small one, whether that's more robotaxis or more geofence or whatever. But at the same time, I could see it being a couple of months before we really hear much of an update about Robotaxi. And short term, you know, a lot of people will pick on that. And long term, it will mean nothing.
I have a conspiracy theory that we're not going to get the shareholder meeting date announcement until they have decided that they are ready to open up the geofence and that there's going to be overlap between shareholders actually getting to experience the Robotaxi network and the shareholder meeting.
So take Robotaxi from your hotel to the meeting.
Or some designated like pickup point or something.
I see.
Yeah, with the buses. Yeah, that's a good idea.
What's more exciting to you guys, them expanding the geofence or adding more cars to the fleet?
They have to do both. Those two go in tandem in my eyes, because you can't expand the geofence without more cars. Otherwise, wait times will be too big.
Well, you could keep the current geofence and just still add more cars to the, you know, south of the river.
To me, yeah, more cars is the biggest thing, because it's like the biggest fundamental driver is growth in miles. And growth in miles is much more tied to growth in fleet than it is service area.
It's more tied to service area because there will be more trips available in the service area. There are only so many trips in that tiny bit of South Austin.
I like the cars Pons. Number, because isn't there like 1,500 Waymos for $250 million in revenue or something? So yeah. It's like, all right, well, might not take that long to get to 1,500. So
wait, like we go $250 million in revenue. Is that a real number out there?
That's my calculation. That I think,
Your calculation. Okay.
That I think is pretty right. I maybe you guys should double check, but 1,500 Waymos doing equals about $250 million annualized revenue run rate.
Mm-hmm.
Which is insane.
We need 6,000 robotaxis so that we can be at a clean billy.
Yeah. And then it'll start showing up on the P&L.
250 checks out. Yeah, 250 checks out. So it's like, so the model that I'm building for Robotaxi, I'm assuming about $500 a day in revenue, 16 hours of operations, a little bit over two trips per hour. And then if you extrapolate that, and then the revenue per mile is similar to Uber. And I'm assuming about 5 miles on average for a trip. And so if you extrapolate that for that Waymo number, it's about 273 million per year.
I mean, Waymo alone has 1,500 cars doing 250,000 rides a week. I mean, just think for Tesla, the numbers could get real crazy real quick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's only economical if the teleoperator's to robotaxi ratio is in check. So it's profitable at 3-to-1. It's profitable at 3 robotaxis to 1 teleoperator. It's breaking even at 2-to-1. It's money losing at 1-to-1. It's a disaster at 1-to-2, which is what they have right now, basically, right? So they got to get to 3-to-1 very quickly for it to make
money.
I guess
the question for Waymo is, they obviously aren't building any more Jaguar I-Paces. That's been discontinued. So when is their 6th generation sensor suite in vehicle come out? I saw it testing personally in LA. And it's sort of, it's a Zeekr van. They have that. I think they have a one other partnership with maybe Hyundai.
Yeah.
But sort of unclear what they're end up going to, if they're going to go with both or one or the other or whatnot. But they don't build their own cars. So that's a major disadvantage for them.
Yeah. They don't control the fleet. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
Like if a model gets discontinued.
Very strange. Can I have some more of my own robotaxis, please? Like, what a weird way to go about it. But most companies can't just start a car manufacturing facility.
Can I have some more of my own robotaxis to put on someone else's network? That's what's happening in Austin.
That's so weird.
Yeah. That's the story of all the OEMs, all the old auto, right? Is I need all these parts to make my car from all of these different people.
And then we have the CEO for Jim Farley being like, people want to master driving and he doesn't think self-driving is going to be as safe as humans. And I'm like, dude, you are not the guy clearly to lead this company into the future. Crazy.
That was a shocking statement, because you would have thought, given how quote unquote forward thinking Ford was with the supercharger network.
I know.
Right. I think the investors, my theory is investors saw their disastrous earnings with the EV line. They're like, you need to pull out of EVs because this is crazy. And then he's feeling the pressure from his board and the investor base saying, you're messing up our dividends. You're messing up the earnings. It's like, okay, fine. Well, you know, and then, either knowingly or unknowingly, you would think knowingly, because I think Jim is a very intelligent guy. He's just, all these guys, Chris's point was exactly, like, all these guys are captured by an investor base that doesn't want innovation. And this has become so clear to me. There's this interview with Palmer Luckey that he had with
Peter Diamandis,
where he said, sometimes I have to say crazy shit so I shake out the people that I don't want invested in my company. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, you have what is happening at Ford right now. And that's why maybe Elon says some crazy shit sometimes, because he doesn't want people invested in the company that he's not aligned with personally, because then he's going to feel the pressure from the investor base and the board. And he's like, I don't want to fucking deal with this. I got robotaxis to build. I got bots to build. I don't want to cater to your dumb dividend.
He doesn't want Ross Gerber's on the board.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is an issue for these legacy auto manufacturers that, they've been auto companies, but to probably survive in the future, they have to become technology and almost AI companies. And for CEOs like Jim Farley, that's just not their area of expertise. So they're going to be sort of caught being like, well, what do we do? Even like VW still hasn't been able to figure out building their own software in-house. Their software on their EVs is terrible. They still struggle with that, let alone, AI and self-driving. So it's going to be tough for these legacy auto manufacturers.
100%. Yeah, and I was going to say, imagine Ford announcing they're going to build a robot. It'd be weird. You'd be like, is it a gas-powered robot? Like, how are you even, what are you going to do,
It's got Blue Cruise.
Yes.
A hybrid robot?
Can walk in a straight line.
That's so right.
So
about 5 years from now, it'll be able to pass slow traffic.
Exactly. So it's very strange. Yeah. But you know what? We're very excited about Tesla, and I'm very excited too, but we need to see them expand, right? It launched. It's going pretty well, I think. Tesla has all the data, but within the next like month or two, three at the worst, we need to see something grow, get bigger, get better. And then we can continue to be excited. But I don't want to get too hyped up of like, Tesla's going to destroy everyone because they're going to flood the market with robotaxis. It's like, that's the idea. And
they will.
I think they will eventually. But I don't want to get too excited about it until we start to see it happening, right? We did the first step. There's 11 robo-taxis in Austin. Now we need to, you know, quadruple that, right? And then go from there.
I love how dad mode Chris is coming out. He's like, children, please temper down. All right, temper down. No, it's legit. I mean, it's you're 100% right.
You know, it's easy to get lost in your own sauce, you know? And you just, you want to keep everything in check so you don't end up being disappointed if, again, eventually none of it is really going to matter, in my opinion. It's going to be 3 years from now or 5 years from now or whatever it is, it's going to be like, wow, there's robotaxis everywhere. That was cool. But in this short, very short term interim, there could be disappointments. And 100%. You know, you want to be ready for those as well.
I think Gally said it best when we were riding around in the car. It feels like a very high risk time for the story. Do you set that? I'm pretty sure you set that. Yeah, yeah.
They're all in on this.
They're all in.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And so that's good. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Well, yeah.
And I think, I'm just kidding.
No, so I was like, did we mess up again? Oh my God.
Go ahead.
No, I it's very like bet the company. Like, I think they like canceled a lot of the other cheaper vehicles, like aren't focusing on that. Like, it's like robo-taxi or bust, kind of like Model 3 was in some ways, or autonomy or bust. And so, and just any hiccup in that is going to be interesting to watch how it plays out. Like, I think we're in like a moment of chill now, but we forget how like vicious the media can be of like, one hiccup happens. And I forget what we were talking about in this conversation, but I wrote down how like how many Ubers I've been in with like viral moments, if it was a robo-taxi, where like the human pilot driver messed up. So and like what you were saying with the Waymo, so we know that's going to happen with Tesla. We know a video is going to go viral. You know Gavin Newsom's going to get on TV saying we have to ban this. You know Elizabeth Warren's going to make a tweet storm saying Elon Musk has self-driving cars killing people. You know, like, so it's like, okay, well, what happens?
And it's taking your job.
And there's going to be no jobs. So what happens when that happens? And I think that's just a microcosm of what's going to happen with Optimus when people just are resistant to change. The status quo is the more change you're making, the more haters you're going to get. And so it's just, I'm curious, like we're in uncharted territory there, but yeah.
Yeah. I think those are great call outs. Go ahead.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember, but a few years ago, it wasn't a big thing, but Elon had talked about how, you know, they're like, because for many years, I mean, what in 2019, he said, yeah, next year we're going to have, you know, Model 3s driving around all over the place in 2020. And obviously, you know, we're way past that. And some point after that, in between then and now, he kind of said, it's before ChatGPT was a big thing, or, you know, we all have our own AIs on our phones and stuff. He said, you know what? I think that this whole self-driving thing is going to get to the point where it's going to take almost basically AGI. We're going to need like an artificial, just general intelligence just to kind of solve this problem. And I remember feeling a little, you know, kind of defeated or let down by that, because I was like, that's insane. This is, you're talking like far future kind of stuff. And holy moly, look at us now. You know, we're kind of there. We do have these, I mean, everyone wants to debate exactly what an AGI is, but I think if you took, you know, Grok from right now and put it in 2016, I think people would probably be like, holy crap, that's an AGI. You know what I mean? We kind of got to where he was saying in terms of like, yeah, we basically needed like almost or pretty much AGI to make this thing work. And it's all kind of converging at the same point. Like, we have this really intelligent computer going on, the self-driving robotaxis launching at the same time. You're going to have Optimus in the next few years, which is what I'm most excited about right now. So I just thought that was really interesting that he called that out several years ago, and it kind of ended up happening that way.
How was your interview with CNN, Chris?
Oh, it was, you know what? It was actually pretty good. Yeah. So I didn't really talk about it much on X. I'll have to see if somebody posted it. I can repost it or something. But honestly, their questions were pretty fair. And the spot, like I don't have cable, so I didn't watch it, but of course my in-laws watched it, because, you know, they're older folk that like to watch that stuff. And well, they do not like CNN, to be fair, but they knew I was going to be on there, and they thought it was pretty good. I ended up seeing the clip. I think they recorded it, or somebody sent it to me or something. I was only in it for a few seconds out of the couple of minutes, And it was fine. You know, they showed one clip from one of my videos where it messed up and went into park in the left turn lane. And they also showed pulling over the ambulance, and they said like it did a very good job. The only negative part that I didn't like so much was they had Dan O'Dowd at the end and, you know, his little child dummies and stuff. But overall, I would say it was much better than I thought. After I talked to them, there was no like gotcha moments. The only one where I was a little sketched was they were like, so, you know, Elon Musk loves to blow up these rockets and just kind of break everything and, you know, with no disregard to advance it. Do you think he's doing that with Robotaxi? And I was like, no, you know, like Tesla has said multiple times, safety is number one. But so that was really the only one where I was like, are they going to twist this in some way to like show a rocket blowing up and then like, oh, and now the Robotaxi, you know. But overall, to be honest, like I kind of vetted the person I talked to for like almost a month. She was not one of these like emailed me the day of the event and said, hey, give me a ride. She had talked to me several weeks before the event. We talked on the phone and she asked me off the record, you know, she asked me tons of questions and she could have been lying or whatever, but she seemed genuinely interested. She really did. And that's why I went ahead with that one, because even though CNN's like honestly one of the worst, and I told her that, I mean, I said right to her on the phone, I was like, honestly, like, I just don't trust you. And most people don't trust you. You guys lie about pretty much everything. And, you know, I went into all that with her. She seemed genuinely curious, but overall, I think they did a pretty fair job of showing, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, I saw the clip. I thought there were some good moments. I do think, you know, I find it interesting where at the end, when the two people were talking at the end, they're like, well, maybe it will stop parking in the middle of the road or something. I'm like, well, or maybe it will bring down the cost of transportation and, you know, give everybody a chance to, you know, get around and old folks have an ability to have freedom. Like, why does it always have to be framed
in such a
bullshit way?
I know. And I went into that a lot, you know, at one point. Of course, I talked to them for probably 45 minutes and I was in, you know, 30 seconds of the thing, which is fine. But at one point, the guy said, like, don't you think it's kind of boring? I like driving. Isn't that fun? And I'm like, well, driving isn't supposed to be fun. And, you know, I went into the whole thing of like, this is going to enable transport for people who are disabled or they're, you know, they can't be independent for some reason. Or even like one of the things that I think a lot of people don't think about discrimination. What if you have like an Uber driver pull up and just looks at you and is like, I'm not picking that and leaves, you know, like all of that is gone. So I did go into those points. Of course, they didn't include any of that. but yeah.
What most people don't get is like people aren't driving for fun. They're driving to get from point A to point B. And if you can do that even more safely, more cheaply, less expensive, and with a better overall experience, people are going to choose that. And that's what the Tesla Robotaxi service is, in my opinion. People don't care about, oh, I can't wait to. I said this yesterday on another podcast. I was like, no one says to themselves, oh, I can't wait for the driving experience to go to McDonald's today. Like, I can't wait. Like Jim Farley was like, people want to master driving. I'm like, I can't wait to help like master driving going to McDonald's today. Like no one says that. So yeah.
The Zoomers just want to doom scroll on TikTok for as long as possible, including in the car. So if they don't have to put themselves at risk to do that, then they will.
Yeah, no, I did go into all of those points with them. And I, you know, I said the classic, like, oh, there are people still ride bikes and horses. So people will still drive cars in the future. But, you know, they didn't want to include any of that. They, again, I think it was a pretty decent overall. It wasn't just like a huge, like, oh, this is the worst thing ever. But yeah, and it's funny because that, what you mentioned, Farzad, is not even part of the piece. It was that woman. I mean, maybe they planned that line, but it was the woman's quip at the end after rolling their, you know, pre-edited video.
That's what drives the opinion to the audience, right? So these are the little tricks that these networks do, is that they show you a piece and then they tell you how to think about it.
Yes.
Right? That's the problem with this shit.
Well, and they ended with Dan O'Dowd. Like, you know, the thing that people are going to remember from the clip is whatever happened towards the end. And so like Dan's stupid opinion and his rigged tests. Like, I want to see any single human be able to drive past a line of cars and you don't know, like, you have to drive at a set speed and you don't know, one of these cars, there's going to be a child that comes out within 20 feet of you and you have to stop. You don't know which one. Now don't hit that mannequin. Like, no human driver is going to do any better than FSD is doing in those situations, and I'll bet you the average is way, way worse. And yeah, they're like, it just drives me crazy that people show clips of this test where he's like, wait a second, did you pay attention? Like, could you have stopped for that car with that amount of reaction or time? I don't think so.
And not only that, but he would be testing this with every self-driving vehicle. He would be doing this with Waymo. He would be doing this with Zoox. He would be doing this with all of them. He would have taken the video that I shot of the Waymos just causing chaos outside of Terry Black's, and he should be running an ad campaign saying, look at how unsafe self-driving cars are, period. He's not doing that. So, you know, the bias is pretty obvious. I do think, I did find it fascinating that the day of the launch, like the next day, you know, us, you know, biased influencers that were out there testing this thing, what percentage of the news articles were negative? It was like 95% plus, you know, and it was unbelievable. It's like, okay, so like someone has to scratch your back so that you run something positive. Okay. Your default is negative because you know, that's what's going to get you clicks. So it's like, okay. Like
The Verge wrote a whole story because my robotaxi went 35 and a 30. It's like, okay. All humans were doing that too around us.
It's unbelievable. Yeah.
There was it's going off a little bit, but so when my father-in-law, you know, heard I was going to talk to CNN or that I did talk to them, he was like, okay, that's a mistake, but, you know, go for it. And he told me a story. So he worked at GM for a long, long, long time. And I don't know, he sent me the news article about this. It's from a long time ago, but the long story short is that this news agency was testing these GM vehicles that were like possibly at risk of catching on fire from their gas tank or something. And in the testing, this news agency, I'm going to post about it because I never heard of this and it's the wildest thing. In their testing, the news agency was crashing these cars and they couldn't get them to start on fire. They just couldn't get it to happen. So they rigged them with explosives and blew them up with explosives and ran the story as if the crash is what caused it. And he told me that he remembers that moment at work and they were all devastated and they felt so bad because these people, these are humans. They care about the safety of people driving the cars. And then it, you know, was discovered what this news agency did and they got in trouble. They had to issue an apology and all this stuff. And he said everyone at work just celebrated because they were kind of vindicated. They knew it was fake. They knew it was fake, but that's what these places do. They rigged a car with explosives to make, how insane. How insane is that? So that's what these places will do. Those are the lengths they'll go. After he told me that story, I was like, man, I wish you would have told me that before. I never would have talked to these guys. It ended up, you know, okay. But he made me even more worried because I hadn't seen the story yet. But
this is like the equivalent of YouTube land of choosing a title and thumbnail before you do the video, right? But like this title thumbnail is going to be a banger. And then you make it match the title thumbnail, you know? Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Okay.
By the way, this is not Robotax related, but the House is currently voting on the, you know, Trump's big bill. It's looking like it might pass, which would be, which means the EV credit would end on September, the end of September, which just means this Q3 is going to be pretty crazy.
Oh. America Party headlines are going to give us sweet buying opportunities on Tesla stock.
Yep.
Let's go.
So they're voting right now?
Yeah.
How long does voting take usually?
Well, it really depends, honestly. But usually they want to
go
on.
Yeah, they want to go on vacation, so it'll be pretty quick.
Trump's big beautiful bill passes the House.
There it is.
Damn! None of us are on X. We all missed it.
Yeah.
Hey, 1 minute ago.
Oh my goodness!
Breaking news. Well, America Party, here it comes. EV tax credit ends on September of 2025. So if you want a Tesla, I've reached my limit for my referrals. So do any of you have any left on your referral link? Chris is done. Sawyer's done.
I do.
Galley, you do? What about you, Hans?
use Galley's.
You sure? Okay. Galley, you're about to get it. Okay. So if you'd like to purchase a Tesla before the EV tax credit runs out, not a sponsor, FYI, we just all are Tesla owners, please use Galley's reference. What is it called?
Referral code.
Thank you. English is not my first language. Referral code in the pinned comment in the comment section below, or go to G Filchi on X or Galley on YouTube or Hyperchange to go check out his referral code. Crazy. Okay, so it's Elon going to go you're welcome. Is Elon going to go on a tweet storm today?
Oh yeah, he said he would start the America Party the next day.
On July 4th.
Next day is July 4th. That would be wild.
That's poetic.
I mean, it's perfect.
Oh God.
Oh God. Yeah.
Sawyer, I don't think he can. Your independence day is ruined.
Yeah. I don't think he can hold off until tomorrow. I think we're gonna
day early.
Yeah.
Man.
Wow.
That's crazy that they actually got that thing through. That's wild.
All right, I probably got to jump to sort of cover some of this.
Yeah, you got to. Yep, okay, bye, everybody. Galley's Code, thank you all. Thank you all very much.
All right, guys.
For making happy July 4th. All
right. Happy July 4th. Let's go, America. EB tax credit, Galley's referral. Check
red,
out
white,
Chris, Dirty
shirt.
Tesla, OG, Sawyer, at Sawyer Merritt on X, Hans, at Hans C. Nelson. Bye. End recording.